Stay tuned for The Lynn Show. Today, I'm playing an interview I did with a remarkable performer, June Garber. June's story is compelling because she discovered her need to perform, her desire to sing, her natural voice very, very young, and you will enjoy the stories that she tells about how she discovered Hollywood in a neighbor's yard at 3 or 4 years old. But having discovered this very young, she ran into some major obstacles. She ran into obstacles that lots of people run into. Unfortunately, many people who run into these obstacles are stopped cold in their tracks and never get an opportunity to be who they really are. June never lost sight of who she was and what she needed to do. And we're very lucky because, as a result, we get to hear this glorious voice and see this wonderful performer. You're going to hear this story coming up soon, so hang on. Here come the show.
Hearing from an inner voice, finding choice where there's no choice, with gentle prodding from the voice. Oh, you really can.
Show is about recognizing that there may be something about you that you don't know. There may be something that you were born with, a way of being, a quality, an asset, a talent, an instinct, that because of something that happened to you in your childhood, you were forced or at least discouraged from demonstrating, forced to hide or discouraged from demonstrating. The Lynn Show is about making this point, about saying that I believe that many of us, most of us, maybe the large majority of us, are living lives in which we are able to access much of what we are, some of who we are, but not all of who we are. In my therapy practice, I see this over and over again. People who have been discouraged from recognizing their capacity for joy, their capacity to feel safe, their capacity to be assertive, demonstrate who they really are. You see it over and over again. Sometimes shyness is simply the inability to say, here I am. This is who you see, yeah, right? It's what you got, right? And nobody is born with that. Nobody is born with the inability to be joyful. Nobody is born with the sensation of always being in danger, vulnerable, having to be vigilant. Nobody's born like that. That happens to us. There's the wonderful song in, oh God, I've blocked the name of the show. You've got to be carefully taught. And that, of course, is the truth. You have to be taught to suppress your capacity for joy, to ignore your ability to feel safe, comfortable. You have to be taught that the world is a dangerous place, otherwise it isn't. So many of us come out of our childhood as a limited version of who we are. And as I said in my psychotherapy practice, so much of what I'm trying to do is to help people to recognize that, people in therapy will always say, well, not just in therapy, they say it all over the place, you'll hear it if you're listening for it, well, that's just who I am. Well, no, that isn't just who you are. That is just who you decided you had to be. That is just who your childhood taught you you had better be. That is just who they told you you were, or that you had better be, otherwise there would be a price to pay for it. But it isn't who you are. Mostly, you are more than that. And in my book, When You Can, You Will, Why You Can't Always Do What You Want to Do and What to Do About It, I talk about a cover story. And you know, like a spy has a cover story? Well, the spy's cover story is about making sure that something about them is not known. Because if the whole truth about them is known, it will be dangerous for them. Well, many of us have cover stories. We are demonstrating some portion of us, maybe even a large portion of us, but quite often that isn't the whole truth. That undercover, we have kept safely hidden away aspects of ourselves which we could really use in our adulthood. I don't have to make the point for how much better it would be if someone who is rarely joyful were able to be joyful more often. I sure don't have to make the case for not being vigilant all the time and not being afraid. I don't have to make the case for if you had a natural tendency to draw and you just fell in love with color as a baby, as a toddler, but you were told that that was a very bad thing or a not useful thing, that attraction to color, to drawing, to graphics, to pictures. Probably your life would be better if you had that back. So the Lynn Show is about trying to make this point, hoping that if you're listening, you're asking yourself, is there something about me that I don't have access to, that I want and actually have but haven't been able to use? And if the answer to that is yes, then you might want to just think about that. Because just knowing that is not enough to make it happen. And of course, that is the work of therapy. So if you're interested in pursuing that, and you either are in therapy or know a therapist or know somebody who knows a therapist, you might want to run that by them. If you want to talk more about that with me, you can get access to me on my website, which is thelynnshow.com, T-H-E-L-Y-N-N-E, don't leave the E out of Lynn, thelynnshow.com, and there's a little place to click on email me, and you can ask me any question, or you can ask me to talk to you. I do all my work on the phone these days, and I wrote an article about that called Psychotherapy on the Go, which you can read on the website, or you can get access to the book. And of course, you can hear all of the shows that I have ever done, because all the podcasts are up there on the website, including the show that I'm doing right this minute, and the interview that I am going to play in a very short time. I interview people who make their living or their life with an art, and today's interview is no exception. This is June Garber, who is an amazing singer. She's got an extraordinary voice with an amazing range, and she sings with a passion and a commitment, and you know, her whole self is in that song. And at the same time, you can see that she's having a hell of a time. And so are you when you are watching her and listening to her. And June's story is interesting because she discovered quite early that she was a performer. You'll hear her tell this hilarious story about finding Hollywood in the neighborhood when she was 3 or 4. But life conspired to make it very difficult for June to be the person she is. And still, through all of it, she knew who she was and was able finally to grab it by the throat and not let go. And we are extremely fortunate. She will talk a little bit about Al Hickson's Jazz Jam. That's a local jazz jam that takes place in Sarasota from about October to May. And we are lucky enough to have June come down and sing at it. I'm going to play 2 cuts from her album. I'm still speaking in old terms, her CD, which is called Here's to You. I'm going to play 1 song right before I play her interview. Actually, I'm going to go right from the song into the interview, and then I'm going to play a song after the interview. I'm going to play this song first. It's Over the Rainbow. This is not Judy Garland's Over the Rainbow. And so that you can, when you're listening to her talk about the obstacles, you can hear what it must have been like to suppress this amazing talent and this essence. So, okay, here is June Garber doing Over the Rainbow, and right after that, her interview.
When all the world is a hopeless jumble and the raindrops tumble all around, heaven opens a magic lane. When all the clouds darken up the skyway, there's a rainbow highway to be found, leading from your window pane to a place behind the sun. Just a step beyond the rain. Somewhere over the rainbow, way up high, there's a land that I heard of once in a lullaby. And that you dare to dream, will it do come true? Someday I'll wish upon a star and wake up where the clouds are far behind. Where troubles melt like lemon drops away above the chimney tops, that's where you'll find me. Somewhere over the why then, oh why can't I? Clouds are far behind, where troubles melt like lemon drops away above the chimney tops. That's the rainbow. Why then, oh why can't I? If happy little bluebirds fly beyond the rainbow, why, oh why can't I?
Okay, so I'm here with June Garber, who is a brilliant singer and performer, just remarkable. And I'm explaining to June that I interview people who make their living or their life with an art. And it's glaringly apparent that you have made your living, much of your life, with the art of music, with the art of singing. Am I right?
Yes, it is my passion. It was what I was born to do.
Yes, that is clear. I have been lucky enough to see June perform a lot. And when you see her, you know that this is coming from her essence.
Yes,
I know.
For feeling that and knowing that, because that's where it's from.
It's clear. Okay, so I only ask one question.
Yes.
And that is, Do you remember, can you pinpoint, the first moment when you thought singing, performing music was important to you, essential to you, what you needed to do? Not the first time you did it or performed, but the first time you had the sense that this was, that you were going to be captured by this.
Yes.
Oh, good.
I think I was 4.
Yeah, yeah, tell me.
Yeah. And there's a long story after that that you will find interesting, but I'll wait.
Yes, we'll get to it. Yes. Yeah, yeah.
So I became aware when I was 4, mm-hmm. and I knew that I was meant to perform. And I had a natural voice.
How did you know you were meant to perform?
I can't even tell you. It just was an innate sense that this was meant to be.
That people were supposed to watch you, that you were supposed to entertain. That
yes, everything. We lived in Johannesburg, South Africa, and it was in a... like a suburb. So each house had a little lawn outside and their fence. I would pack my suitcase and go to Hollywood, which was 2 streets down. Everything in the suitcase ready to unpack my suitcase in Hollywood and be a film star and a singer.
At 4?
At 4.
I'm just curious, what was in your suitcase?
It was all my clothes needed for a change. It was all the stuff that I would need to be an actress. My hairbrush, my makeup, everything was in the suitcase, and I would unpack it on somebody's lawn. I don't know whose, but that was Hollywood. And I chose my stage name. My middle name is Glynis. So my name for movies was to be Glynis Haywood.
Okay, so now, how did you hear about Hollywood?
I have no idea, because there was no television. So it must have been when I was taken to see movies downtown Johannesburg in the movie houses.
Do you remember any of those?
I remember them.
Yeah, tell me what you remember.
I remember... let me just think. There were a lot of Disney ones.
Ah, yes.
But there was a lot of stuff like, I remember for my birthday party, I never wanted children's parties. It had to be in the evening and only adults. And we would have a birthday cake and there was that, they would show a movie. Like on the old 8mm cameras, on reel to reel. There was a movie and it was the one, I think it was Can Can. Ooh. Do you remember Toulouse-Lautrec?
Yes.
Coming down the steps, and it was played by an actor. It must have pinned
his leg.
His legs, mm-hmm, yeah. Mm-hmm. And that was one of them. That was for one of
them. And you can still see it, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And then there were, I'm sure it must have been one with Susan Haywood, because I was obviously enamored with her because I took her surname.
Yes, yes, yes.
So there were all these, like, deliciously wonderful movies. So I guess from that, from going to the movies and having the reel-to-reel played at home.
Mm-hmm. Did they have newsreels? Do you remember?
In the cinemas, mm-hmm. prior to the main feature film,
yes.
they would have the black and white movie.
Yes.
Do you remember that?
I do remember it, and my guess is that they talked about Hollywood, and they talked about Hollywood stars
yes.
in those.
Yes, things, you're right.
You know,
and then they'd have the, I think it was Fox.
Yes, I think you're
with
right.
With the searchlights.
Uh-huh.
And I thought, okay, that's it. And that was Oscar night for me.
Yes.
And so I designed my dress. And I can describe it to you.
Do.
Exactly.
Please.
It was midnight blue. It was strapless fitted, and the skirt was made of myriad layers of this tulle, midnight blue. And on each layer were these pieces of crystal.
So you sparkle.
Throughout, so that I was like the midnight sky.
Right.
Don't know
oh
the significance
God.
Of that. Don't know, but
the
always
sky.
Could
Lucky.
Draw. I am a visual artist as well, so I drew this dress.
Okay, now, are you an only child?
No, the middle of 2 boys.
Oh. Mm. So did any of them, did your family know about this aspiration and that you would go off occasionally to Hollywood?
This is so interesting. Mm. When I was 3 years old, my father, Eric Garber, was killed in a plane crash.
Oh dear.
On the way back from North America, which was huge because South Africa transatlantic flights were not common. It crashed in Frankfurt. And no one spoke about him. And my mother, I was born into the Jewish religion. My mother remarried after 3 months, which was unheard of in the Jewish religion. You mourn
for a year.
For a year.
Mm-hmm. I know.
So I was cut off from my father's family, and they never spoke his name again. I never saw a photo. I never heard his name spoken, ever. So I didn't know anything about him. And all I wanted to do was sing and act. And my stepfather said, you are not going to do that. You are not going to sing and you are not going to act unless it's a school play. You are not going to join any groups. So I was not permitted to.
Okay? Wow.
Let's fast forward
to
when I came to Canada, and in about 1990-something, early 90s, 3 or 4, a friend of mine, I decided I want to go back to singing because okay, so when I came to Canada, I started singing.
Well, wait, but back up. Okay, is Garber your father's name?
It's my father's name.
It's your father's name. So you, did you not take your stepfather's? Oh, you did.
I
see. I'm beginning to see it. Okay.
Yes.
All right. So let me just.
We were adopted by him.
Him. Yeah. Okay. So your younger brother.
Yes. He is a half brother.
As a half brother.
Yes.
I got it. Okay.
Yes.
All right.
You are so clever.
You followed. Okay. Yeah. All right. So at 4.
Yes.
You were still holding on to this dream of,
yes,
of Hollywood and performing.
Yes.
But this stepfather put the squash on it.
Yes.
Right. So did you perform in school plays?
Yes.
Yes. Because that was what you were allowed.
Yes.
Okay. And did you sing or did you act
both,
or both?
Both.
Right, right.
Yes.
And it was great fun.
Yes.
And when you were doing it, it stoked the fire of that dream or?
Always.
Yeah.
Always.
Yeah, right.
Always was my home.
Yes.
I was always nervous, you know, before performance, but it was joy to be able to perform.
Yeah, I'm sure that's true. So, so did you go to school? I mean, when you got out of high school, did you?
I was not permitted to continue acting.
Right.
Yeah, so you just listen.
Yeah, right,
know?
Right.
So they said, you cannot go on stage, so you're going to be a school teacher. So I went and studied to be a school teacher and did plays and musicals in the university and the teacher's college.
Yes.
So that I was involved on all fronts.
Right.
Dramatic roles, lead roles, always lead roles.
Right.
And so it just became my joy. And then I became a teacher and married.
Yes.
A gentleman who said, you can either marry me or you can sing. You can't do both. So there I am again.
Wow. Yeah.
Because after my stepfather died, he died very early, I started singing.
Really?
I started singing in and around Toronto, erstwhile being a school teacher. But
and in the evenings,
yes,
on the weekends,
yes,
right. So did the family move to Toronto? Is that how it went?
No.
So you moved there to,
with my ex-husband.
Oh, with your ex-husband?
Yes. Husband in 1975.
I see. And you got the teaching job like a good girl.
Yes.
Then your stepfather died and you started to sing, but your husband said...
But then I met my husband and he said, oh no, he used to have, in those days we all smoked, so he would have a cigarette case and a packet of cigarettes that he'd just bought. And he would sit at the table, transfer them from the packet into the cigarette case the whole night to exude ennui, total boredom, and total discontent with my choice. And so said, no. So again, That's the second time someone said, you cannot sing.
And because of the time you grew up and the situation in which you grew up, you didn't really feel you had a choice.
No.
Right.
No choice.
In all of the growing up years, how much older than you is your older brother?
Four years.
So he was seven when your father died.
He was.
So he remembered.
He remembered, and I remember things.
Really?
I do remember stuff.
Did you talk to your brother about your father, or that was not allowed either?
Not then, no.
Yeah.
It was not allowed. It was just, you just didn't do that. We were such good children in that regard. You know, yes. You just listen.
Right. Okay, so now you're in Canada.
Yes.
And you're teaching, and...
I couldn't teach in Canada. When I came in 75, there were no teachers being hired.
Oh.
So I became a receptionist and learned how to use a switchboard. And at night, while my ex-husband was studying tax, because he was an accountant, he had to re-qualify for the tax laws. When he was doing studying, I would go with a girlfriend who was an actress.
You'd sneak out.
And do, yeah, and I'd do amateur theater.
Mm-hmm. Like community theater.
Yeah, community theater, right.
And so he didn't know.
No, he did know, but because he was studying, it was okay.
Okay.
But that was the end of that. And then I started looking in the newspaper. There was like an ad always in the notices. Musical and talent. It was like number 965 column. And they would advertise for bands and singers.
Right.
And I saw once singers. I went, oh, I'm going to try out for this. And I did. And I went on the road with
Wait a minute, are you still married?
I'm still married. And I said, I'm sorry, I've been a receptionist for 2 years. I can no longer do this.
Yeah.
I cannot.
How old were you?
I was 28.
So you were a receptionist for 2 years, but you were a good girl for 28.
Yes. Yes. And then just said, I cannot do this. So I went on the road like joining a circus or some crazy thing and going on the road with this crazy group of pop, middle-of-the-road kind of band. three girl singers up front and five musicians.
Wow.
Off to tour Ontario. It was not glamorous in the least, but I loved it.
Mm-hmm.
And my ex-husband said, I can no longer deal with this.
Yeah.
And I said, I understand. And then I met Bob when I was singing with this group.
Oh, you're kidding.
No.
Wow.
And I met him and he said, you can sing, you can act, you can fly on the trapeze, whatever makes your heart happy. That was the first person.
Wow.
And then, ironically, when I started singing in Canada, and a friend of mine said, you need a website, and did one for me, just out of the blue. And I changed my name to June Garber because I wanted to do something. I'm sorry, I have to backtrack.
Right, yeah.
Because after I sang with this group and then I did theater and I did lots, went to Vegas, sang in Vegas, had my own group. I then wanted to come off the road and just have a real normal life.
Mm-hmm.
So I took a 15-year hiatus from performing.
Wow.
Then when I came back in, I think, 2003, my friend did a website.
Mm-hmm.
And I put June Garber, because I used to go under J. Garba-A, but changed it to Garber.
Which was your father's
which
name.
Which is my father's name. A cousin saw this. A distant cousin in South Africa and said, I just want you to know that if you are June Garber, the daughter of Eric Garber, your father was the best jazz drummer in South Africa. And I never knew he was musical. I never knew he played music. Oh. I never knew anything.
Wow.
Because when I came back in 2003 or 4, I came back singing jazz and big band.
Yes, right.
Because that was my love.
Did you ever talk to your mother about this?
Never.
Wow.
She didn't want to discuss him. she might have felt a tremendous amount of guilt about it.
Yes.
Because my stepfather did not do well by us as a human being.
Ah.
It was very difficult. I can't go into detail.
No,
but
it's not necessary.
An horrendous time.
Yes. Probably for her too.
Yes.
Yeah, right.
And she must have felt so much emotional pain and couldn't...
Well, no, she...
You know,
I mean, she was being a good girl.
Yes.
You know, she was bringing another man in to take care of the family, and she was doing what she thought she was supposed to do, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so then you began singing jazz in 2003?
2003 or 4.
Wow.
Yeah.
And how did that happen?
I can't tell you. I just had this love for this style. Even when I was doing pop, mm-hmm. I would do, and I had two backup singers, and I would do stuff that the man hadn't transferred to.
Mm-hmm.
I would do stuff that the Pointer Sisters did. Anything that had like serious harmonies, serious feel,
mm-hmm.
and had like some kind of content that called me or moved me exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so I always did that and always went with that. And then Broadway, like, I mean, the Great American Songbook,
right.
I did shows that were so beautifully written. I did Pal Joey and Guys and Dolls.
Yeah.
I mean, these are brilliantly written musicals that the song moves the plot forward and continues the story. It doesn't stop dead and go, oh, I have to sing now. It was always like something that we had like excellent content and, mm-hmm. you know.
And interesting and clever lyrics.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I went to jazz and big band, I brought with me my stagecraft that I've done, mm-hmm. my love of the Great American Songbook, and my love of well-written, brilliant songs.
Mm-hmm.
And so that, it was a natural movement, because I found pop songs
boring.
And forgive me, somewhat trite.
Yes.
And I mean, there are some beautiful ones, but mm-hmm. mostly trite.
Right.
And not, you know.
Yeah, not interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, no. And repetitive.
Yes.
Right. Okay.
So
now you're still in Canada and you're doing jazz, right?
Yes.
Okay, well, what happened?
Why did I leave?
Yes.
Okay. Being from South Africa and living in Canada all those years because of literally Bob's business, mm-hmm. and I joined him in his business for 21 years,
mm.
including the hiatus time, it was so cold, mm. and I just felt so not... it wasn't the lifestyle. There were 7 months of the year that I was closeted because of the cold.
Eesh.
I hate it.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, at some point when you retire, do you think it would be possible to move to a warmer climate by the ocean? Which was my dream.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, absolutely. And so we did. And
how did you find Sarasota?
Well, a lot of musicians in Toronto. I've been so fortunate. I've met some really beautiful and brilliant musicians, and they've helped me and mentored me and, you know, given so generously of themselves, and they talked a lot about Sarasota.
Really?
As a place, as a haven for brilliant music.
Mm-hmm.
So we said, well, we'll come and have a look. And we did. You know, I mean, this West Coast is something.
I know. Okay,
yeah.
So okay. I want to tell everyone that when she can, June comes down to the Jazz Jam on Monday nights.
Yes.
Al Hickson's Jazz Jam, which I will talk about in the show. And also, I know that you have a bunch of things coming up, so why don't you tell us what they are?
Okay. Well, I've got some. I have to write them down because That it's on my website.
Uh-huh.
So,
well, say what your website is.
Oh, it's JuneGarber, JuneGarber.com.
Oh.
And under performance schedule, it's all listed. But tonight, for example, I'll be with an 11-piece band at Ocean Blue, and they play some of the classic big band. And tomorrow night, I'll be at the Opera House with a wonderful saxophone and flute player, Tom Ellison. Just the two of us.
Oh, my.
Doing a spot. And then I'm also going to be next week in Tampa at a lovely little boite, a little spot called Eddie V's. And I'll be with Eddie Tobin and Mark Nguyen-Twando. And then it goes like so everyone can see. You know, so each week there's something delicious and wonderful.
So finally,
yes,
right? You have found your Hollywood.
Yes. I need to have that dress made.
You should.
Yes.
You definitely should.
And I just want to go back to 15 South.
Yeah.
Because Al Hickson, talking about wonderful mentors and phenomenal people, he has just been so generous and so sweet and so kind. And you know, doesn't he just...
Yes.
He's helped me personally. I'm sure he's helped you so
much.
And he helps everyone and has this fabulous spot for people to come and sing their hearts out.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. And I'll talk more about that.
Yeah.
Okay, so I ask another question.
Yes.
And it is thinking about all the time that you've given to this art, the art of music, the art of performance, the art of singing... Is there anything you would say about what that's like?
I always have to go within and to listen to what the truth is when I'm asked such a deep, complicated question as that.
Take your time.
Yeah. You know, there have been times where I've been very driven to achieve. And at this point in my life, I'm not. I'm more accepting and grateful of every opportunity that is given to me. There's never a time now that I go out searching for a gig.
Wow.
It's phenomenal. So my joy now is if someone would say to me, what do you think about doing this? And I go, that's amazing. I would love that. So I think that when artists are driven to do something, I think you skew your vision.
Ah.
I think that it becomes, in a way, more about getting than being able to do. Does that make sense?
It does. It makes a lot of sense. It makes a lot of sense.
Because then what you're doing is not no longer pure, out of pure love and pure artistry. It becomes more of a commercial thing that you are driven to do A, B, C, D. Also because maybe, like when you're young, you have so much that you want to achieve. And I think, and maybe so much to earn and want to make your living commercially as an artist.
Need to.
And so, but I do think that then you are having to do things that you don't necessarily want to do.
Right.
Whereas the privilege now and the wisdom of being a little older and understanding, it becomes more of a, this would be artistically wonderful, and I would love to do that.
It's a great place to stop, June. Yeah. Thank you so much.
Thank you, and your talent is remarkable. And thank you for your beautiful spirit.
Oh, thank you, dear.
So you hear what it sounds like when a person really knows who they are and what they need to do and what it is that fulfills them and what it is that makes them feel alive, and what it is, maybe even, they were meant to do, what is essentially them. And when you hear June talk about what it feels like for her to be a singer, and that amazing story of having found Hollywood in a neighbor's yard and packing her little suitcase and moving there at 3 or 4 years old, you can hear that she knew from the beginning. And you can also hear the amazing dedication that she kept coming back to it, even though her culture, and quite often it is our culture, not only our family of origin, of course in June's case it was both her family of origin, well, her stepfather, who was essentially her family of origin, and her culture, which told her to obey men and to do what they said and not to do differently. And so while she felt compelled to follow the prescribed course for women of her generation, she never lost the power, the knowledge, the certainty that this is what she was meant to do, and every chance she got, she kept coming on back to it, right? And this is quite, I think, not common. Certainly there are other people, if you've listened to my other interviews, you hear this thread quite often. I knew I had to do it, and I had obstacles, and people told me not to, and it didn't go easily, and still, I persevered in one way or another. But even though you hear that, it isn't common. What is more common is I got squashed. They told me not to do it. They told me it wasn't nice. They told me it was ugly. They told me any number of things. They punished me when I did it. They teased me, humiliated me, neglected me, punished me, right? And so it became essentially too hard. And I don't talk a lot about brain chemistry in these shows, although hopefully I will do in the future. Our brain learns, so that if the punishment is significant for that act, then the brain learns that that act is going to bring a punishment. If the teasing or the neglect or the humiliation is strong enough, then the brain learns that that action is going to bring teasing and humiliation. And later, when we have the impulse to do that thing, our brain says, oh no, remember that? It's going to bring something bad. And it drops a chemical in our bloodstream which tells us not to do it. Maybe it makes us afraid, or it makes us, I've got quite often hear people say, well, I have a client actually, she wanted to paint. And so I gave her the assignment to go to an art store and buy all her stuff, and she bought all her stuff. She was a good girl. And then I gave her the assignment that for 5, 10, maybe 15 minutes a day, she should take out the stuff and just play with it. And after the first week, she came back into therapy, and I said, so how'd it go? She said, you know, I didn't do it, not even 5 minutes. I said, well, what happened? She said, I set aside the time, and somehow, I don't know, I looked up and it was too late. Or I thought about doing it and I thought, oh, I'm too tired, I don't feel like it. Or, and there were all of these reasons not to do it. And essentially what was happening was her brain was saying, no, that's a dangerous thing, don't do that. And it dropped chemicals in her bloodstream that made her feel too tired or apathetic or not want to or forget it, or, you know, it distracted her. And that's what happens to so many of us. So June's story is somewhat unusual, that the power of the obstacles in her life were very huge. And still, she was able to hold on to the certainty that this was what she was meant to do. And as I said, every chance she got back out there. And you can hear from the album you know, I did it again, didn't I, from the CD, that, you know, she came into this life with an extraordinary instrument. And sorry that, well, if you live in Sarasota, then come on down to the Jazz Jam on Monday nights at 15 South on St. Armand's Circle and hear her whenever she's there. Or, as she gave you her website, you can find out where she's playing, and or you can go up on her website and get her CD, Here's to You, which has 13 songs on it, two of which are only the ones I played. And if you listen to them, I know that, you know, if you have any interest in good music and or jazz, then you would want to hear more of June. So I'm grateful for this show, this demonstration of what it is I'm trying to prove with the Lynn Show. And let me say one more time, my website is thelynnshow.com, thelynnshow, thelynnshow.com. And as always, I hope you got something from this show, something you can use, something that, even if it was just that you got a, you know, that you enjoyed listening to June sing, something that'll bring you back. Because next week I will be here, same time, same station. And as always, I sure hope you will be too. And we're going to go out on June's version of The Second Time Around.
Love is lovelier the second time around. Just as wonderful with both feet on the ground. It's the second time you hear your love song sung. Makes you think perhaps that love like you's is wasted on the young. Love's more comfortable the second time you fall. Like a friendly home, the second time you call, who can say what brought us to this miracle? That we found there are some who bet love comes but once, and yet I'm oh so glad we the second time around. comfortable. The second time you fall, just like a friendly home. The second time you call, who can say what brought us to this miracle that we found? There are some who bet love comes but once, and yet I'm so glad we met the second time around.
You see, I'm getting older, my hair is turning gray. Oh, you say my face and figure have both seen days. Well, I won't be retiring, I won't slip out of sight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper, I am going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I just keep returning like some goddamn boomerang. No, I won't go with a whimper, I am going with a bang. You see that I have had my shot, my time has come and gone. Oh, won't I please get off the stage, let someone else get on. Well, I won't be relegated or leave without a fight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper, I am going with a bang. Life's a bell I keep on ringing, not a chime that I once rang. You may think it's unseemly, well, I don't give a dang. No, I won't go with a whimper, I am going with a bang. Rising from the ashes, every chance I get, I may be running out of time, but it ain't